You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
And to those people who think it's funny when you give somebody a bottle you've just shaken up, I say to you, go away.
Oh, wow, Flanders.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, presented by CinemaSins.
Welcome to Behind the Sins, a weekly look at everything going on inside the world of CinemaSins. I'm Aaron Dyster, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Jotkins.
Hello, hello.
And Hanae Dews.
Honeydew.
We write for Cinema Sins and TV Sins and do various other things inside the Cinema Sins universe as well. I guess I should have said I'm Darren Iser if I was going to go ahead and do that whole thing, but I didn't want to give it away.
Did not want to give it away.
How is everybody? Everybody doing okay?
Yeah.
Man, yeah. It's like one of those times in life where you have to stop and think about it, though, isn't it?
Well, I mean, I have 5 different layers of lip gloss on today, so I had to really consider how my day is going.
I have like 3 weeks of like my daughter's school left, so like I feel like that's a, like I'm winding down towards like the beginning of summer, and that's kind of what my calendar's at right now. So
I'm with you. We have a senior, and he has 2 weeks to get a few grades up so that he could graduate. It's like, right, it's the final push to have him care and overcome his bout with senioritis, because that apparently happens. So I'm kind of in that as well.
So in 2 weeks, you won't have a kid in school anymore, like in high school anymore. Like you'll be done,
we'll have one,
K through 12.
We'll have one left.
Oh, that's right. You have like a junior, right?
Sophomore. He'll be a junior next year. Yeah. Yeah. They're all 2 years apart in school. We'll have one left in a couple weeks.
Wow.
And our third is talking about moving out right away, too. So I'm not sure if that'll happen. But if so, then we'll have just one child left at home.
Glad you finally added the at home part. We'll have just one left after this.
They all leave you eventually.
I am jealous, however, of Danae, that she can kind of measure her mood by how many layers of lip gloss she has on. I think that's a very useful skill.
I've literally spent time today just kind of like brain fried a little, and I'll look around and I have this pile of lip gloss that I've been accumulating, just different colors I'll try on from time to time. And since I've been doing organizational stuff, like everything goes in one spot now, and I'm really working on just keeping everything together. So I have this pile of lip gloss, and I'm like, you know what? What if I just add this one too? And that's as many brain cells as I have today.
It's like how you can tell the age of a redwood by how many rings, you know, are around the trunk. That's like how you can tell by how many layers of lip gloss.
Yeah. Just if I just peel off my lip gloss, like if I kiss that piece of paper, it'll be like an inch thick, just gloopy gloss.
It's amazing.
No, everything is good. It's just been, BTS, we recorded the end of a week. Mm-hmm. And then the last couple of times we've had to record, we've recorded it towards the middle to end of our day.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And it's been a very activity filled week for me. So,
yes.
I'm ready for a nap, personally.
Okay. Well, let's
and we
hold
have
that
our
off.
Final, we have our final Sin Week.
Yeah, we gotta work tonight too. So
Yeah, yeah. I'm excited about tonight, though. That's
going to be great.
A lot of fun. It is definitely been an interesting week. There's lots of interesting stuff going on behind the scenes of Behind the Sins. But let's get into the stuff that you come for. Let's talk about the Sinside Scoop.
Let's talk about Dungeons & Dragons. Oh, wait, no.
No, not that.
What's he building in there?
We're going to take a look at the videos from the week, the process of sinning them, how we felt about the stuff we're sinning in general. We'll kick it off in commercial sins land with Mountain Dew Zero The Shining commercial. Chris wrote this one. Chris Hackinson wrote this one. How do we feel about carbonated sugar beverages?
I almost said Doritos, but I guess Doritos and Mountain Dew kind of go together, right? So that kind of
They do, actually. They do actually kind of go together.
I like straight up Mountain Dew fine. I don't enjoy like when you start adding flavors and taking away sugar and making it diet. And then you've lost me with Mountain Dew. I think the Mountain Dew, but I will say, and this is going to like, we're going to lose listeners. I'm sorry. I do prefer Mellow Yellow. I do.
So. Oh, wow. That is an interesting preference.
But I'm a Diet Dr. Pepper guy, so I don't drink much of either. So
I don't understand how any of that is related. It's like sports talk to me. But I'm a Diet Dr. Pepper guy, so then it justifies this decision over here.
You don't
here.
Know why Mellow Yellow and Mountain Dew are related? They're like they're the similar beverage from each from Coke and Pepsi.
Right. It's like Coke versus Pepsi.
Or like Dr. Pepper versus Mr. Pibb.
Mr. Pibb versus, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I like Sprite
Whichever one has less carbonation and more syrup is the one I like.
I would say most people are probably Mountain Dew people. I would think that's the more popular drink by quite a bit. But I've always liked Mellow Yellow better.
Is it Sprite versus Sierra Mist?
Is that what it is? What is the Sprite counterpart?
Yeah, Sierra Mist.
Okay. We need a chart. it's that whole kind of thing. I don't think I've had a sip of Mountain Dew since high school. I honestly don't think I have.
That's insane.
I remember I used to drink it in high school because it was so caffeinated and everybody was, you know, it was always like, oh, caffeine. And then I just quit drinking a lot of pop. And so then, you know, when I do drink pop, it's Dr. Pepper almost exclusively. And that's usually only when my wife has one. So.
I had Dr. Pepper this week. I think it was Monday. And it was the first Dr. Pepper I've had in like 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. I've had like 5 today. So
and he like literally picks up a plastic red cup like you would see at Pizza Inn or Pizza Hut.
Yeah, no, it's a Coke cup. Yep.
Yeah, the Coke cup. Yeah. That's awesome.
I won't be able to do this next week when we're live. I won't be able to
do this.
Why? Because Coke doesn't advertise with us.
Oh, shit. I guess I need to put this
Vita
Coco coconut water away.
If you want to be on the live stream of BTS pop companies, you got to pay up.
Yeah.
That's right.
We don't give away those spots for free.
Speaking of, you're from Michigan, right? So that's the pop thing. That's not a Missouri thing, right? What is Missouri?
No.
Is
soda.
I swear to God, everybody calls everything Coke here. Like, it's like, what kind of Coke do you want? It's the weirdest thing. I've never understood that, but that's what they do here. So
Yep.
We should mention the live thing.
We should.
For our peeps.
Patreon.com/CinemaSins for members that give at $10 and up. There's some sweet perks, and one of them will be given a link every week. You'll get a post with a link to our live stream that you can watch and enjoy. We will be going live every Friday at 11 a.m. Central. There will be sometimes that the schedule will have to change just based on our work. But for the most part, that's what you're going to be able to set your clock to. And you can watch us record this. You'll be able to see all of the shenanigans.
Do we say 11 or do we say 10:30? I feel like 10:30 is right. Because we don't need an hour before we go live. Did we say 11?
I have several layers of lip gloss on today, so I don't know.
Listen, if you are a Sin Club member,
I'm literally mindlessly just going, this is pretty. That's all I got.
If you are a Sin Club member, you will get a post a little bit before we go live that will let you know what time. It'll be somewhere in that 10:30 a.m. Central range to 11 a.m. Central. And it may be a little bit different each week depending on kind of how we're doing that morning. But yeah, it'll be right around that time every single week. In fact, the day that this comes out, it will be tomorrow.
It'll be tomorrow.
So if you're listening this on release day, tomorrow is the first live show. So, God.
Yeah.
So back to Mountain Dew Zero. I do think Mountain Dew has become that beverage that has all the flavors. Like Lay's has all the chip flavors. Like Mountain Dew like has so many crazy flavors they do now.
Yeah, it's like just, it all like the Code wild. Red and the the Berry Blue and the they have a watermelon one now, which somebody lied to me and said was good. It is not. It is really bad.
And then if you go to Taco Bell, they've got like the Baja Blast and like, you know, all those Mountain Dew things. So yeah, it's really interesting how they've kind of become that.
It's pretty awesome. For people. It's like gum flavor, but with soda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think soda is a good idea in massive quantities just because of how much sugar is in it. But I definitely had a major soda addiction for a long time that I remember having to beat. So anytime we talk about soda, I'm going to remember that.
It's all I got left. Yeah. You're not taking it away from me.
It's your one vice.
I've quit a lot of things.
And I'm not doing that. No, I used to get to work. I'd have a cigarette and a Dr. Pepper, listen to music, and that was my thing. And there was something about the combination of all of that together that was just, I loved it so much. I'd go into the restaurant and I would have to open the restaurant. So, you know, you're vacuuming, you're getting things set up. And it was just this whole thing. I would have Dr. Pepper, coffee, cigarette, a vacuum cleaner, loud music. And that was like my life for a while.
30-minute bathroom break after that. Keep your
Yeah.
No, I just went and smoked pot in the walk-in cooler. That's where I go. Oh, is that what you're talking about? Oh.
Did Chris have anything to say about this one?
Yeah, he said Mountain Dew Zero, The Shining, is a fun ad with Bryan Cranston doing the Jack Nicholson role and the set designer is doing a pretty admirable job of making everything look exactly like the movie. But parodies of serious things like The Shining obviously have sins since the subject matter isn't serious at all. They recreate the scene with Jack chopping down a bathroom door, but it's also his wife will try Mountain Dew Zero. I had to step back and ask myself, how hard is it to get someone to try a new drink? Is it close to murdering my family hard? Anyway, it's stupid to be critical of commercials like these, but it's also fun as hell.
That's why we do it.
Ding.
Yeah, I really enjoyed this one. The commercial itself I thought was pretty funny, pretty clever, and I really enjoyed our sitting of it. Jonathan, you want to kick us off with some of the stuff that you wanted to point out?
Yeah, no, and I will say it's not a bad I mean, I think I like Cranston and Tracy Ellis Ross so much that makes it better than it probably is, but...
Sure,
yeah. But I know what you're saying. Yeah, no, I like the... I mean, obviously, the Mountain Dew backwards, the Weddin' and Tim, mm-hmm. I thought was very funny. Sure, you got Cranston to play the twins, but no old naked lady. I really liked. I also liked pointing out that they got everything down to a T to match, except they didn't put that red box.
I definitely had that. The red box was one of my favorite parts of this Sids video.
Yeah.
Danae, what about you?
Mountain Dew backwards was one that I really enjoyed. And I'm only giving like one because the scripts are so short.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, sure.
So
no, I totally understand that.
I can talk
that.
About the whole thing. Also, I have 72 from Wonder Woman, so we got to get there quickly.
Well, that you wrote on that script. So hopefully Jonathan and I will mention some of them so you don't have to go through all,
we'll be
all
here for a while.
72 of them. The only other one I had was shaking the contents of the bottle will cause it to spew when it's opened and you will lose all of its fizz. This is evil.
This is evil.
And to those people who think it's funny when you give somebody a bottle you've just shaken up, I say to you, go away. Okay, let's move on.
Oh, wow, Flanders.
I thought Aaron was going to say shoot.
I apologize. I was very harsh there. All right, let's move on to TV sins. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the whole world is watching. This, of course, is a Trial of the Chicago 7 parody, this episode. And so, which was a little strange when they did that, but who knew? No, this is a Hughes Watkins script, Danae and Jonathan writing on this one. How are we feeling after episode 4 of Falcon and the Winter Soldier, guys?
So this was 4. See, that's every time I watch one of these videos, I'm like, wait, what episode was this? This
is the one that ends with the murder.
The shield bashing.
We got some back and forth about whether we should have given a sin or taken a sin away.
Do you want to talk about that now? Because I had that in the comment section.
Many comments are like, how did you not do X, Y, Z?
We did, yeah. If I remember
correctly. We should talk about it now.
We did have a sin. We went back and forth. And at one point, there was also a removal. I think I was the one that poo-pooed that just because it looked weird. It was like, I don't know. He was like killing somebody and we were taking a sin off.
Here's how I remember it. Yeah. And you guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I think you two had the sins on there in your initial script.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in my mind, wanted a removal there because I think it is a very powerful, it's a very bold choice to make.
I totally agree.
Like, it's a really bold thing to do. And so I was thinking,
it's a great ending.
It's a great ending. And then, so then my mind went to what we did with the Red Wedding, where it was like, obviously everything that's happening is awful, but we're also taking sins off because this is Game of Thrones and it's mm-hmm. blowing our minds and it's being bold. And so I was trying to think of how we could do a similar thing to the Red Wedding with this. And when we put it together, and you guys were very kind to let me kind of mess around with it and stuff. When we put it together, I just don't think it quite worked. I just don't think the way it was constructed, maybe if we had more time to really kind of figure it out, maybe we could have made it a little longer, done something a little different where the narrator is saying why the sins are coming off or something like that, but the truth of the matter is it just wasn't working the way we did it in the edit, and so we ended up just having it add sins.
And
so,
I will say personally, like, the Red Wedding, I mean, when you're talking about stuff like that, like, I will say, I don't know, this was a really cool moment, it was a really good way to end the episode. I'm not positive this show earned that moment, though.
I agree with that.
And so I think that was also, it just from a personal standpoint, it wasn't like, I get why people find that so powerful, and especially just from in today's mindset and what's going on in the real world with authority figures maybe taking more authority than they really have, that kind of thing. I think it's really trying to say something, and I totally respect that. I just, like, we talked about this a little bit last week. I think this show is fighting a battle with just being like a fun Marvel action show and a show that has something to say. And I think there are occasions where it's able to be both. But as big of a moment as this was, I was conflicted with how it played in the episode proper, I guess.
Yeah. So we made a call, and I don't begrudge anybody for thinking there should have been sins off there. But at the same time, the answer to that is the same as it is every time. It's like, none of this really means anything. So it's okay.
It does.
You can still love the end of the show even if we didn't take sins off. Like, that's all right. We did too. Danae, is that kind of how you remember it too? Did you have anything to add to that whole conversation?
No, I think you guys covered the bases. The other sin off thing that I wanted to do, so this is, your guys will like this. So I wrote a sin. It was really short, and it was like something I really wanted to spend time developing, but was for the very opening sequence when Bucky is free and he's, the actor's just like delivering this incredible performance. And I really loved it. And I found myself feeling really moved by it. And so I just wrote down in my notes for my script, "I'm not crying, you're crying," just to kind of come back and sort of find something that's had more substance to it. And then when it came down time to get the script up, get it going, get it into production, I kept trying to write something and I couldn't find my sincere angle. And so I cut it from the script because I was lead. So when I was looking for the notes, and there's so many comments like, how could you not give a sin off for this moment? And I'm like, well, actually, I think we tried to do that. What happened there? Like, oh, I cut my own sin. That's what happened.
I will say that didn't stand out to me the way it did to other people. That was another thing. I when I saw people complaining about that, I was kind of like, really? Okay. Well, and we did give a sin off for Anthony Mackie. So, and I think some people were saying, how are you going to give a sin off for him and not? And like Aaron said, none of it matters. And we like Sebastian Stan. We even said the whole thing about, you know, oh my God, do I like Bucky now? Like, we've had that sin already in one of these episodes. Mm-hmm. So
Yeah, it's always, there's always going to be a comment, and there always is a comment in every single video of someone with an opinion about what could have been given back.
Yeah, if you people know, could kind stop of, having opinions, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, a little wink and nod to either the show itself or a moment, something that's epic, something personal that you really loved. And those I don't mind. But when I do, when it does itch at me is when there's so many and I'm like, oh yeah, I missed the ball there. I should have spent more time. And so that's two, I think, in one where it's like, okay, if we would have spent more time, maybe we could have found the right way to give this episode the props it deserves. Because this episode, there's a lot that happens. But I will say, just to kind of touch on like my thoughts on this episode specifically, there's so much to sin in this episode. Like, this is really when the show clips into high gear on just skipping over stuff. And we talked about it last week with the revelation of going back and doing reshoots and cuts and things like this. This is where I think I can see even more of where the show potentially suffers from having to kind of skip around on certain stuff or just like make a big leap and jump over things. Yeah. Like, let's see.
Well, the super maze. Serum. I mean, the fact that, you know, we don't see Walker, like all of a sudden he's just a super soldier.
Completely skipping over all and of that, which could have been really cool.
I get that's supposed to be a twist, but I don't know that it needed to be. Because it's like, I don't think any of us were surprised that he took it. So the fact that we didn't get to see it happen.
Yeah.
Just, or, I don't know.
And it's to trade out time to see the Flag Smashers do more and to see Falcon do more. So I understand there has to be a trade-off of theater of the mind. The stuff that was really bothering me in this one is, for example, this is the when the Flag Smashers have this very convenient week-long funeral celebration that everyone can kind of go to and find each other at.
Yeah.
And you have Carly, who looks up into the rafters multiple times. You have a room filled with these super soldiers that have that none of them pick up on anything and they just leave her alone. I just find that stuff to be next to impossible to have happened considering how on edge they would be that they're all being watched and they just kind of like go, we're just going to do this anyway. Mm-hmm. But the stuff that really pissed me off was Zemo not being followed in every single thing I watch. If there's a superhero chase for a bad guy, you just jump down holes and go running through sewers. Like, they just stop at a dark hole. That is absolutely mind-boggling to me. And then the Dora Milaje showing up, they don't even go for Zemo, who they're there for. They go for the heroes instead. Literally almost killing Captain America, Battlestar, and fighting with Bucky and Falcon. The four people that they work alongside of, they go for them and not Zemo. And that is just like, I don't understand what this show is trying to do right now, but it really lost a lot of, to me, respect. And then, yes, this twist at the end, which you see coming from a mile away, Walker being unstable and, you know, not able to really manage his emotions as this hero to the people. So that one wasn't a surprise to me. I wasn't surprised. I mean, yes, it's surprising to see them do something that's so violent. That's true. But it wasn't a twist in a way where I'm like, oh, I didn't see that character development coming. It's more like, oh, I didn't see that the Dora Milaje just tried to kill these people. I didn't see that coming.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't we talking about that? You know?
I think it's interesting because you can at the same time respect them for going there, like where they choose to go at the end of this episode and several other times through the show where they're like, oh, you went there. Like, you can respect them for going there and at the same time be disappointed at how they get there. You know what I mean? Like, that they take shortcuts or that they telegraph it too much. Like, you know, those things aren't mutually exclusive. They both can be true. They can deserve props and, you know,
and maybe
whatever.
This show would have been a mess, pandemic or no pandemic, but we'll never know. And I think now that we've seen the whole thing, we can look at it as a whole and we can see where clearly they had to make some changes and move some stuff around. And, you know, maybe because I mean, I don't know what they had. I feel like the whole Carly and Flag Smashers thing, though, had to be like a if it wasn't a last minute ad, they did something to them because they feel so underdeveloped. And their actions a lot of the times don't even make sense. Like, Carly is a really hard character for me. Like, the actor is very good. I like the presence, but she makes some of the dumbest decisions.
Yeah.
And we send that where she's just showing up in public places and it's just like, what are you doing? Like,
Yeah. Anyway, it was easy to send this episode. That's for sure.
Well, let's get into it then. I'll kick us off since you guys wrote on it. Also, how does he keep getting guns?
You said it exactly like you read it. That was funny.
Oh, is that how I read it too?
Yeah, but it's true. How?
Yeah.
How?
Yeah, exactly.
You said it. And why is Zemo still here? I can't do an Aaron.
And then you mentioned the was AO seriously going to murder Captain America? Because I think AO seriously going to murder Captain America. And then following that with also the Battlestar in the same way. I enjoyed that. For whatever reason, this useless clock slayed me.
Yeah, that was just hilarious.
This useless clock. It was great. And then I missed the part where the split party found the dungeon map and managed to reunite in a maze. such convenience that this show has as to when people are lost and when they are found. So that's what I had. Danae, what else did you have?
I loved the dishwasher for the Captain America shield.
Mm-hmm.
I laughed whenever I read that. And I also really loved using a WWE sentence outtake for the sentence turning heel. That was really fun for me because I got to have my husband involved in that one. I was like, what's one of the most epic heel moments in WWE history? He was like, oh, I have the perfect one. It was then da-da-da-da happened. And I was like, I don't need to know the details. Just tell me where to find it on YouTube.
Hit me up with the link. So it was then Hogan, right? It was the Hogan heel turn. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that was a really fun part for me. But I loved this entire script. So it was hard for me to actually write down just even a couple. Like, I kind of went crazy. So,
We
mentioned a lot in our overall sending of the episode.
Jonathan, what about you?
I think I have some Turkish delight somewhere around here. Nope, that's a Rolo. That was wearing a car seat belt as a belt buckle, I thought was hilarious. Just a funny thing to notice. I fucking Sharon. I don't know why, but that cracked me up. And then might need a little more firepower than Captain Fomerica and Lamar Hoskins. Poor Lamar Hoskins.
Poor Lamar Hoskins. Just
more to come. More to come about poor Lamar in later scripts. All right, let's move on to Square Bob SpongePants. We're going to do Graveyard Shift is the name of the episode, where they decide to keep the Krusty Krab open all night long. And
those crazy SpongeBob people.
This was a Dicer Hughes script, today and I writing on this one. I don't have much to add about SpongeBob. I do find myself really liking the show the more we watch episodes.
Same.
The more I just kind of vibe with its humor and, you know, just kind of it's ridiculous. It's out there. It's nonsense. This one ends with the Nosferatu joke that just completely is.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere. Now, originally, apparently, this episode had a storyline about somebody who was in the floorboards who was doing all this stuff, and they had to cut that out, and so that Nosferatu thing was just a last-second ad to, like, you know, wrap it all up or something. I'm having a good time sending these, and I had a really good time sending this episode specifically.
They're
11
minutes, as we've talked about, which is always...
That's true. That is right.
Although you guys had, like, 75
cents. Okay, let's talk about that.
It's like, holy crap.
Dude,
and Aaron's like, I don't really know what you guys mean by too many sins. I'm like, well, this is too many. Like,
listen, if they're all good, keep them all. If they're all good, keep them all.
Yeah, it was a really awkward back and forth, but it's a good conversation to have. The show is 11 minutes long.
Yeah.
The sins video shouldn't be 25 minutes long on a SpongeBob
episode. I disagree.
Well, it's logistically a nightmare, though, because for the editors, they've got to, like, have a sin every 2 seconds or something. Yeah. Like, that's a lot to, you know, and then we're having to reshow footage and, you know, there's...
I don't know. These commercials are a minute long and we make 6-minute videos out of them. We can, you know, like, it's... The precedent has been set to do 6 times the length of the material. So, honestly, we could do an hour-long video on an 11-minute SpongeBob episode.
That'd be great.
Yeah. We had to genuinely go back and forth on some stuff and kind of go, okay, yeah. I think this one can get cut or this one. And it is hard when there are good ones, which we'll actually talk about a little bit more on Wonder Woman too. Just this idea of when you have a lot of good content, it is difficult to say which one is the best one for the vibe of what we're going for here. Cause sometimes you cut a more serious one that's a genuine sin to kind of, to hit the vibe of like humor a little bit more and vice versa. So
yeah,
definitely. We had a lot of sins for this one.
It's just so fun.
You specifically, it was like you got inspired by the sins gods or something. And you just wrote.
I did have a moment. Like you'll have a moment sometimes where you're like, oh, I'm in the, like, it's from Soul. Like I was in whatever the space in Soul when you get in the groove. Like I had ascended to, you know, that level. You know, there's these people playing instruments and singing and playing sports, and there's me writing sins in the
context. There's like 2-hour movies that we've written cinema scripts for that were shorter than this.
Yeah. Yes.
I was just having a good time, and especially when you're in a groove of with something like this where it's all silly. It's just all silly because obviously you're not like. There's one sin in here about...
You can't use a telephone underwater. Yeah, it's like, how many of those can you write?
I mean, the show knows how silly it is, so we just have to be silly along with it, I think. And so that's what we tend to do. But I did enjoy it. I had a good time, and I liked this episode. Jonathan, why don't you kick us off? What were some of your...
Well, I mean, my favorite was, of course, the whole thing about the story about the multiple SpongeBobs, and then it ended with, ironically, it was because they couldn't agree about the right to bear arms.
That was in the comments, two people enjoying that. And I'm just like, that was an Aaron edition. That was a combine, essentially, it's like a merger
really,
of sins.
Really? That was Aaron? No way.
And the bare arms things. And I rolled my eyes so hard. He heard it in his house.
I'm sure.
Miles away.
I'm sure.
I was like, oh my God, are we really adding this? And he's like, yeah. And then everyone loves it. And then I feel super outnumbered.
Speaking on the you know, talking about you can't use a phone and stuff. I like the, where do you draw your line on cartoon physics? I thought that was really funny. And then I also had being this horny for your musical instrument as a romantic partner. I just thought it was well worded.
Yeah.
So.
And the end of that one is you're already sporting woodwind.
Yep.
You're already sporting woodwind. Yeah. That's the cartoon physics one you mentioned too was important to me because I don't like cartoon physics is cartoon physics, but why does he need plungers if the water's just going to stay in the bucket? I don't understand like how it's not gravity and gravity at the same time.
Yeah.
Like that's, you know, that's the part of it that really
for
squeezes
sure.
my sponge.
Squeezes your sponge.
Danae, why don't you go next?
I wrote down a few, but I'll just do one, which was the covered in grease sin. I really enjoyed that one where it's like sleepover covered in grease and the sin is so regular sleepover then.
Yeah, which I had that one written down too.
When I wrote that one, I've never had a sleepover like that before, but it just was like cracked me up. I was like, this would be funny. And I really loved your mega sin. That was really
funny. Yeah. That was interesting in the recording process of that one. I just did sin, mega sin. Like the first time through, and I was like, you know what? That should probably be more like, you know, the monster trucks. And I was, and so in order to get into it, I did like a whole monster truck commercial read. I was like, Sunday, mega sin. You know, like I went through, like I got myself in the mood
mode.
For it or whatever. Yeah. I wanted to talk also about the closing Bikini Bottoms premiere eatery at 8 p.m. is way too early sin.
Mm-hmm.
Because I got the chance to include a personal story in there about a very sad day when I tried to go get a peanut butter shake from Dairy Queen.
You were felt in the comments. People were like, they felt you.
I think people can relate. I think people can relate.
There was one person specifically that said, like, I felt this. I once went to a DQ at 11. Like, it was disappointing. And then the comments filled with people who actually work in fast food. And they're like, this happens all the time. People come to the door and knock on the door like, I need food. Yeah.
Well, and everything's open so late now. And that did not used to be the case. Like it was like, I mean,
it was Taco Bell or nothing for a long time.
But even Taco Bell, they weren't open like all night like they are now.
It was 2 a.m. I think
Taco Bell. I thought for sure Taco Bell was open all night
when
I was in high school.
Maybe. Maybe I'm
I mean,
wrong.
As somebody whose first job was Taco Bell, no.
Fair enough. Maybe at it was different in different area. Places.
Yeah, exactly.
Who knows? I also wanted to mention, are these barely there sheets made by Facebook? Because they don't seem at all concerned with your privacy. I wanted to mention that one then. And then this Time's On for Some Rhyme, I thought was fun.
That was good.
Too. All right, we can move on to music video sins. BTS, Film Out. BTS is referencing some sort of band that may be, I guess, a little bit popular, and not as
not
opposed
this
to
podcast.
This
not
podcast.
This podcast.
I like the way these guys sound. I like BTS. I think they sound this nice groove
like,
song.
It's kind of
chill.
Fine. It feels like another kind of nothing song though. Like we've had a few of these in a row. I feel like, or I was just, I don't know.
Well, it's definitely a nothing video, and you know, Barrett rightfully sends it for that through the whole thing. Cause it's just, they are doing nothing in this. So yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about it. I think we can go right into the sins. I will start. I Math Well made me laugh quite a bit. Finally, some lyrics I can understand after the la-las. I always appreciate that. And then when the guy's holding the hourglass and he's like, dude, just buy a watch already.
I had that one too. That's funny.
That's the good stuff. What else do you have, Jonathan?
You mentioned actually two of the ones I had written down. The only other one I had was, that may have been the most business forward sin I've ever done. I just thought it was really funny.
Yeah. Yeah. Danae?
This video is so slow, it's moving backwards. I appreciate it. And then when they're looking through, I guess it's a window, and the other person disappears, and the sin is, you know, this is a fantasy that they've had at least twice. I just it made me stop and think, and I love that one. So
very nice. All right, let's move into the cinema sins, and Danae, the time has come for Wonder Woman 1984.
Fuck this movie!
If you guys don't want to be spoiled, so skip ahead an hour and a half, and we'll be talking about Jerry Maguire.
I was so disappointed watching this movie.
It's terrible,
right?
Yep.
It was so bad.
I knew that it was going to be bad because I'd been told that it was going to be bad, and so I didn't know what to expect.
But you still weren't prepared, right?
What bad meant? There's different levels of bad. There's different things. So I didn't know what it would be experientially, but it turns out on every level it was bad, and that was it's very disappointing, especially since I really enjoyed the first Wonder Woman. Mm-hmm. I think it was so powerful, and this one, she's just a fucking mess. She is a emotional love hound, paralyzed, unable to do any cool shit until she changes armor. Even then, she struggles.
How do you go?
Renounces
from the
wish. I mean, it was just absolutely like the plot, everything falls apart when
you
look at it.
I think the boob armor has purpose, though. I disagree with you on. I'm just kidding.
Oh, we'll get there. We'll get there.
We will get there. How do you go from no man's land scene in the first Wonder Woman to this being this character in this movie? It's a completely different person. And that's only just scratching the surface of the craziness that's wrong with this movie. By the way, this is a Chris and Danae script writing on this one, Atkinson Hughes. So did Chris have anything to say? We should start with his thoughts and then kind of go from there.
Sure. You're in a rush, WB, and there's no good explanation for it. They turned one of their bright spots into an instant lowlight with the sequel. It's 2 hours and 30 minutes and feels longer than the Snyder Cut. New writers were on this one. When all was said and done, there were over 600 sins to choose from.
Wow.
We had to whittle it down to around 140. So it was a process between Chris, myself, and it was a labor of brutal love. Anyway, he continues by saying, loved one of the new writer's sins on Wonder Woman's wedge shoes. Mm-hmm. The wedges complete with, these are the kinds of shoes that people with, can I speak to the manager's hair wear? The most fun I had was breaking down the race at the beginning of the movie. 9 contestants enter, 7 are expected to make it as far as the beach, 6 horses, everything else is set up for 7 people, bows, arrows, targets, banners. As you look at the arena, so why are there 9 people at the start of this race? Also, everything involving the wishes are dumb, from how they work to how many wishes people get to Max Lord wishing to be the wishing stone and not turning into a stone. I think he kind of cut himself off there because it's so sinful. Like,
it really is. Yeah.
He was just getting started. I feel it. So he stops there, but yeah.
No, he's absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Jonathan and I are absolutely right. Everybody's absolutely right. This movie is terrible, and it blows my mind that this product somehow got released. I just don't understand how you get this far. Oof. On something like this.
I think the thing that sucks about it for me the most is every time you really consider the things that Wonder Woman is doing as a superhero, it's so tied to other things. It's either a convenience thing about, you know, the opening mall sequence to defining who she is. She's this well-educated woman who knows all these languages, and but the entire movie is about other things. It's not about her being a hero. It's about her being lovesick.
Right.
And as a woman who has seen this so many times, it is so frustrating to see that, you know, your hero is just literally reduced to this rubble of emotion, and you're supposed to be excited about it. And then the other thing that's interesting, I know, Aaron, you wouldn't know this, but one of the best fight scenes is the trailer. And that's like, of the fight scenes she has, it's like the only real cool shit. I mean, she does some cool shit, but she does really pulled back cool shit because she's losing her powers the whole time. Oh my God. Which is one of my favorite scenes that Chris did, was like, the ones where he's like poking about her, like, whoa, she's real struggling with her powers. Behold her powers here. They're so funny. It was easy to sin, but it was, it's a laborious movie coupled with a laborious process of 5 sins writers and 600 mm-hmm. sins to consider. It was a lot of work.
Remember we were excited that HBO Max was going to release all these day and date movies, and now it's like, I was just thinking about this after I watched Mortal Kombat last week. I'm like, right. Maybe this wasn't as good of an idea as I thought it was going to be. I don't know.
Well, then you start to wonder, is it just me? Like, is it just because I'm watching them on streaming? If I was watching them in the movie theater, would I like them more? I think the answer is no. Definitely not this one. Yeah. It's strange. Well, we got Judas and the Black Messiah. That was amazing.
No, that's true. That's true.
But yeah.
But back to the movie. Can I tell you another thing that really bothered me about the movie?
Please. Oh, would it be the sexual assault on the unwilling man?
That was uncomfortable. You know how, like, so a movie will oftentimes set up something at the very beginning that pays off at the end. It's a very common thing. We see it all the time. TV shows.
Foreshadowing, yes.
Books do this. So the start of this is this competition where little Diana is supposed to be taught a lesson about not cutting corners and cheating, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which I guess is reflected somehow in not choosing to keep your dead boyfriend in another man's body.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposed to be the tie-in, right?
The tie-in is the theme. The theme of this movie is supposed to be about not taking shortcuts. It's supposed to be about the idea that difficulty is part of the process of growing.
But this movie doesn't even know what it's talking about, because she doesn't take a shortcut.
Nobody knows what they're doing is a shortcut.
The perspective I had on that scene was that, oh, cool, you know, she figured something out. She figured out, even though she was down, she figured out a way to come back and win.
Yeah.
I'm like,
mm-hmm.
let's say that she
knew that she was cheating.
Yeah.
She was like, okay, I'm going to look down here. I'm going to cheat. But then you give someone a wish stone that's just a big piece of citrine that's just like pulled out of something. And they're like, man, I wish I had a Coke. They don't know that what they're doing is a shortcut at all. There's no...
No, I was just thinking that would be my wish. So that's why that was funny. Wish I had died Dr. Pepper right now.
And we touch on that and send that, but nobody understands that they're taking shortcuts here until the end of the movie, when they believe a personality on TV that says, I'll make your wishes come true, who is standing apparently at, like, I don't know, the White House, it looks like. There is nothing about this movie that ties it into something that we can understand. It's just...
By the way, you just have to stick your
thumb up your ass and be like, I'm having fun here.
When we were talking about Superman 3 a few weeks ago, you guys were like I can't believe how bad that this is Superman 3. Like, this is the exact same type of experience.
Yeah.
It's insane.
This is one of such a bummer.
It's one of those movies where you watch it, and there are many times in Sin's videos where we will write something or watch something, and I will be like, oh yeah, good point. I didn't think of that. And I love that feeling in Sin's videos. This is one of those movies where everyone who watched it saw every one of these things the first time they watched it. Like, it was just like, and that's fine, you know, but it's just all right there. Like, there's no, like, having to think through the problems with this movie.
There are people that defend this movie, though, and, like, I usually don't, I never judge. Like, you like what you, but this is one where I'm like, I don't get it. Like, I really need you to explain to me. I mean, you just must be such a DC fan that... Yeah. You're just so excited you get to see Wonder Woman or something. I don't know.
It could be that there is a desire to see the end of a love story that is has more closure or whatever.
We saw the end of the love story.
That's what I'm saying.
It had closure.
And you didn't need to bring it back in this way to have Chris Pine in your movie. You did. And you represent a woman that is not able to be powerful in loss is what you just did.
Yeah.
Like, you made... her wish to have Steve back somehow be her crippling power. And then
40 years later, right? Or more.
Yeah, like, it was a while. It was a long time. Anyway.
It was World War II, wasn't it? In the
Or was it one? Was it one?
I think it was one.
I think it was World War I. I think you're right. So at least.
So 60 years later.
Yeah. It was a long time. Yeah,
so for 60 years, she has not been able to
process
love?
This? Yeah.
I know, ridiculous. And that's the frustrating thing is, like, so that's a personality trait of Wonder Woman is that she, like, I'm not saying that it's not easy to lose somebody that you care about, but and as pointed out, they didn't know each other that long. There was that great Chris Pining joke that was written by one of the new writers that was great. And it's like, you had so much time to process what it's like. And also, you live longer than people in general. So you're going to constantly be around people who are dying around you because you are basically immortal. So not only should you be ready and prepared and experiencing loss of your best friends, of your mentors, like all the people in these old photos, they did. And you're still alive. But because it was Chris Pine, we're supposed to believe, you know what I mean? It's just, anyway.
Because there is an interesting story there, right? Because I think being immortal would suck in a lot of ways because of that, right? And I think
it's Tuck Everlasting.
Yeah, yeah. And if so, you could explore that absolutely. But the way this movie chooses to explore it, it just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And then she essentially, I mean, I don't know what you want to call that, letting that guy let him take over that other guy's body, whatever you want to call that.
What was that?
It's not good.
What was that?
It's not good.
Yeah, it ain't good. It's a
crime.
It is a crime, for sure. I'll start us off with some of the sins. Maybe you don't need a purse. Made me laugh when they left the purse behind. Had to mention vegans. Have to mention the vegan sin.
So funny.
Very, very funny. The mention of the gemstone the size of a horse's willy. First of all, hilarious. Second of all, you may not have seen a horse's willy because it was a little small compared to the horses I've seen procreating.
So,
and yes, I have seen horses procreating.
I wrote that sin and I ended it. I ended it with, and don't ask how I know this.
You apparently don't know this,
which we cut off, which is fine. But I actually thought that as I was writing, I was like, it's a little small, but
it is.
It's just maybe, you know, it's not during an erect moment.
Got
this
it.
Is just,
got
it's
it.
A flaccid, the flat.
Yeah.
And I was like,
it's like, it's, yeah. It's...
Well, there
and
you
don't
go.
Ask
that makes
how
more
I know
sense.
That. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't.
Currently nesting in someone else's skull,
so
talking
good.
About the baby blue eyes. So great. This is a lasso of lies.
Mm-hmm.
I loved. You're going to talk more about the useless boob armor later.
Yes,
or I guess
am.
I think the phrase is useless booby armor.
Booby.
And then throwing out the BS meter was a great joke. Where you heard the glass first. He ate Pop Tarts in bed. Let him go.
I loved that one.
And then I wanted to mention, did the lightning tell her?
I love that.
Really funny. Yeah. This is a great video. Mm-hmm. Great video. Johnson,
it was hilarious. I love, this is the most overcomplicated ball I've ever seen in my life, which is just one of those like things you know, like never thought about until I watched it. Like, there's one more reason for me to hate this movie. They watch banners unfurl. Yay. Holy shit, you're the Mandalorian.
That one killed me.
And then I think Chris mentioned the one, it was the time to talk about that name, Max Lord. I think I'm done. That was really fun.
Yes, yeah, that was good.
And I did want to mention, Speech is as stupid as those tights she's wearing. Those tights were hot. I'm just going to throw that out there. And
they were hot.
Kristen Wiig was not an issue in this movie. Kristen Wiig was doing her best, I thought. And
she didn't have much to work with.
No, she didn't.
Yeah.
She didn't. But her casting, I thought, was the best thing about this movie, basically. Like, making her a villain was a good idea. They didn't do a good job with it, but she does the best she can.
It was one of those moments where I was like, I know you had so much and you can only sin so much, but one of the most sinful moments to me is that moment after she gets her superpowers.
Yeah.
And she's like, she comes out and she like avoids a spill or something and jumps up on the chairs or whatever, and they just have to have some janitor there who's like, wow, you sure are agile in those heels, aren't you, lady? And it's just like, I didn't get what the point of that scene was.
And it's also one of those ridiculous things too, where it's like, she wasn't like hot, you know, in her glasses and her lab wear. You know, it's like,
right,
it's like she just looks like Kristen Wiig. She's just got some she put some hairspray or something in there, you know, same person. Yeah.
Danae, did you have any others you wanted to mention?
Oh, I have like 1,000 that you didn't
get to. It was a joke. It was a joke.
I have 1,000 of them. I'm going to roll some dice and see which one I pick. the one sin for product placement, one sin for liking Pop-Tarts, and one sin for the atrocities about to be done in that bathroom cracked me up. There was several writers pointed out several things about the clumsiness being a character trait of it's kind of shown in women, and that walking in heels isn't a virtue. So I really liked those perspectives. I thought those were really nice to read. I love the Justice League sin for using the invisible jet, which, how would you never use that again? I understand she said, oh, I'm struggling with this, let's just give it a try, and then it works. One of the writers pointed out radar works even on invisible objects, which I super appreciated. Followed up with one of my favorite sins of the entire one was this one from a writer who said, is she saying she doesn't understand how planes fly? It might be pricey, but that you can get this private license, blah, blah, blah. I'm saying this because Diana is an intellectually curious person and she's had like 50 years to figure this out. I don't know why that one really got me, followed directly by, it might not be romantic to talk about fluid dynamics. So just this was like this triple punch of just hilarity that I thought was wonderful. Chris wrote one that I thought was hilarious. The, don't you just hate it when you have an interaction with two completely unrelated people in one place, and then like a day or so later, you somehow run into those same two unrelated people in a completely different place. Just his way of pointing out something that was so convenient, because I might have gone like, oh, isn't it convenient that these people are together? Mm-hmm. But how he wrote it, I thought was very clever. Yep. Asking children to keep internal injuries a secret was great. There was a note on one of them that I really enjoyed. The expo foreshadowing for the, once again, this movie is ground to halt by expositional foreshadowing and then like combining the words together. But the note to the narrator was, good luck. It's just,
yeah,
have fun performing that one. And then the make a wish, any wish. And then just the sin was, I wish this movie would end. And I thought that was great. Clever.
You were talking so about good. The kids, the personal injuries. I also liked on that one where it's like, were these kids in any danger other than what Wonder Woman put them in?
Yeah.
Which is a great observation.
It was a good question. I'm glad that this process is over, because it was such a big process, and I'm glad that I don't have to watch the movie again.
Oh, it's so long, too.
But it was, what a fucking horrible experience.
Ah, well, let's move on to better times, shall we?
No, I want to say one more thing.
Okay.
You know, I know that sinning movies, it's like, it's my job. It's what I do. I'm writing and I'm trying to get into that brain. This was one of those movies that I think when I watched it, I was like, this deserves every sinning. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I
usually I'm joking, but you deserve this.
I actually felt like I was doing my job. Does that make sense?
Like your job had extended from making people laugh and entertaining people to making the world a better place.
Yeah. It was like that. It had a little Love Actually hatred in there, where it was skirting some stuff. It was going into a couple of areas that really genuinely annoy me.
Sometimes you send a movie and you just know you're doing God's work.
God's work on this one.
Yeah, like God's up there like, thank you.
Yes, he is. He's like, yeah, this needed to happen.
No, I don't have to judge because you're doing it for me.
Let's move on to Jerry Maguire. This was a Cher Watkins script. Barrett and Jonathan writing on this one. Danae, have you seen Jerry Maguire?
I don't think so.
I was curious if you had.
You know, it's funny. My wife was telling me she hadn't seen it because I was talking to her about it when I was writing on it. But she was like, you know, she's like, I know all the moments. She's like, right? I'm almost positive I've never just sat down and watched the movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
I have definitely seen the movie. I think it's a bit schmaltzy, but it works at places as well. I think a lot of the reason it works is because of the performances.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I think there's some good stuff about Cuba Gooding in there that is true. He's really good in this movie.
He really is. I hadn't seen it in a long time, and there's so many jokes made about him now, you know, and because especially when you look at the career he had after this. I mean, not that he hasn't done anything, but
sure,
he didn't have the career I think a lot of people thought he would. But no, he's really good in this. Like, I mean, him and Regina King together. Like, I wrote that sin about I'm pissed that they're not married in real life because they're like one of the coolest couples I've ever seen in a movie. I don't care if they're unrealistic. They're just awesome. Like, you just don't want them to ever leave each other. Just stay together.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it has some well-deserved love, this movie. Having said that, it definitely feels its age, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And part of that is the schmaltziness and kind of the over-topness. I think you guys mentioned the over-the-top acting in this, which is, you know, happening a lot more during that time, but specifically Tom Cruise.
Well,
you know,
and I mean, this was
just kinda
Tom Cruise at the height of, like, I mean, every movie he was in was just a mega hit, and including this, right? This was a huge hit, and this was about as Tom Cruise-y as it gets.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. I don't know that I have too much else to say other than that.
I think I was offended by this movie, and I didn't even watch it.
Well, that's possible.
I mean, I can see that. I mean, we point out some stuff that's definitely not great. I think I loved this movie when it came out. I remember when it came out, I thought it worked really well. I don't love it anymore. I like it. It's good. I'm with Aaron. I think it's a little over the top. And we point out the stuff. Like, there's, I mean, this, you know, Jerry's not a great person. And I think the movie wants you to think that he becomes one, and I'm not sure he really does.
Yeah, that's what I wrote down. I wrote down this note, and it's essentially just, is this one of those movies where at the end you get money and somehow that makes all your dreams come true?
Definitely.
It's weird because it's him and Zellweger like play that moment so well. Like, it's just, it's hard not to be moved by that moment. I don't care how cynical you are. It's really hard not to, the whole you complete me, you had me at hello. I mean, it's really hard not to be moved by that. But
yeah.
But you know, as this being our job, doing the Lord's work, as you said, I had to try to figure out a way, like, what about this isn't really working? And then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't know that he earns this at all. Because the 30 minutes or whatever leading up to that, you don't see anything where he changes. And then like you said, all of a sudden, like, something good happens, and now,
and
he's,
then it's okay.
Now he's a better person. Yeah.
Yeah, so it's going to be good because then the people that are watching can kind of go, he's going to turn into a good person.
Yeah.
They're going to have a good relationship. Now they're rich, so they're going to have everything that they need, and that's... Yeah.
And it's kind of unfortunate because I think that one interesting thing about the movie is I think the relationship him and Dorothy have is very true to life. Like, I think there's a lot of relationships like this where people really enjoy hanging out and they enjoy each other's time, but maybe they're just friends maybe they're just roommates, you know, they're not husband and wife. And that was kind of interesting. But then, of course, it's 1996 and it's Hollywood, so we can't end like that. Like, they they could have just had a nice moment at the end where they came together, realized what their relationship actually was. I mean, that would have worked too, but
I don't think that they were making those stories in
the
90s,
though.
You know what I mean?
No.
And that's the thing that I was really thinking about as I was watching the Sins video and making the note about money equals happy ending. Like, oh, of course. That was a very consistent theme.
Yep.
It wouldn't have turned into, this person has codependency issues and is in a really unhealthy relationship. Let's explore what it's like to actually struggle. And now we have movies, I haven't seen this movie, but it's been referenced a lot, that the movie that about divorce that came out recently.
Marriage Story.
Yeah.
Marriage Story. We have movies like that where you get to sit inside the uncomfortable parts of discourse in a relationship. And as time has gone on and with, you know, honesty, and I think the internet has helped in just being brutally honest with each other because you can find support anywhere. Mm-hmm. Like my mother will remind me growing up, it was taboo to talk about your relationship with other people. Mm-hmm. And her parents would have never had conversations. It was all behind closed doors. So any kind of personal struggle that you had or personal revelation about how, you know, you could treat your significant other differently or better, it was all stuff that you hid away and you didn't talk about it. And now it's very common to talk about those things and it's important. And, you know, the advocacy for mental health and just being able to speak about the hard parts of who we are, we didn't see that in movies and content in the 90s. We saw the stories like this where they kind of skip over the stuff and you could kind of fill in the blanks. So well, I don't know that I would enjoy this one
I don't remember how much in the Sins video we show it, but there's a moment that nobody really talks about in the movie with Renee Zellweger where she confronts him and says, like, we need to call it quits for a minute. And she says something along the lines of, like, he really loves my kid and he really, really likes me. And it's just this really nice moment. And it's like a really honest, you know, brutal truth kind of thing. And it's why she became a star. Right. But then the ending, as fun as the ending is, it kind of ruins that scene because she just immediately, he comes back in, he has money now. And she's like, okay, you had me at hello. So I don't know. I'm with you. I think that's the problem I think I have with the movie. I think tonally it's kind of all over the place. But if you just take it as like a fictional, like just kind of entertaining movie of this time period, there's really good performances. So,
right. Yeah. And for this time period, you can look at it and go, ooh, maybe they're trying to go in and press in on these places where the lead, you know, Tom kind of realizes he has a problem and he goes and talks about it. Maybe that was quote unquote groundbreaking or new to see in these big breakthrough performances. Or you normally wouldn't see a male lead try to tiptoe or get into the emotional perspective of it. So maybe it was breaking ground in that way at the time. Now it just is kind of like, oh, you're skipping over the good stuff, you know, which I don't think that in the 90s and certainly not the 80s, 70s, 60s, 50s, certainly not 50s, 40s, 30s, like certainly not. You just didn't talk about that stuff. So anyway, just interesting things to think about.
Yeah, for sure.
As we look at these kinds of relational stories.
Totally agree. Let's move into the Sins. I will kick us off. You had me at Sega. That definitely made me laugh. Comparing the trackball to a clitoris. Perfect. Perfect analogy. You know. Well done. Well done. And then the sin is just, that's... And then you don't even have to say the racist because it's so obviously racist.
That's got to be the one thing that's really not held up.
Was he say, I'm Mr. Black People or stuff or something like that? Yeah.
Yep.
Doing the show me the sins and then asking, you know, for it even more. I liked that. Pete Rose Hall of Fame arguments. Always,
that was bare,
always worth
man,
a sin.
That had me dying when I read that.
Always worth a sin. The loudest I laughed out loud during this video was the, you know how low a light has to be for Tom Cruise to hit his head on it.
We both had a sin about that. We both had that thought because I'm like, because Tom Cruise and I are the same height. And like, there has never been a light that I have almost hit. Like in the history of lights being hung.
Well, you are fortunate. Take it from someone who's hit his head on many, many lights.
But that's what I'm saying. Nobody hangs lights that low.
I had that one too.
Oh my goodness, I laughed so much.
That was like the weirdest way to make somebody look tall that I've ever seen in a movie in my life.
I think this was about Bonnie Hunt winning the movie,
but the
phrase was not to get all Bill Simmons on you, but you know who wins this movie?
And she does, man. She's great.
For a Rewatchables podcast shout out. Very nice. When he goes, that's the truth, can you handle it? And the sin is just career callbacks. Very nicely done. And then I had to mention the triple-decker pizza sign. How did anyone survive this decade?
Yeah, that was a Barrett thing, too. I thought that was a great observation.
It is. And I, too, had forgotten the triple-decker pizza was actually a thing. It's amazing. Let's see. What about you, Danae?
I liked the twist on you complete me and then turning it into codependency. Mm-hmm. I thought that was really clever. I know I'm supposed to be invested in this scene, but all I can think about is how ugly this fish is.
God, so ugly.
Was a welcome, unexpected sin. And then comparing the videography from the movie showing Jerry, like looking all stressed out, and comparing that to Love Actually, I felt that. I felt that deeply. And I appreciated it and also hated it at the same time. Because it was like, ugh, that movie.
That seems weird. Who watches the wedding video at the wedding? That was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That is weird. That is weird. Jonathan?
You guys got a lot of them. I did like, I'm convinced this woman has zero awareness of other people in this house because she just talks at top volume about everybody.
Yeah.
Why don't we get the Jerry Maguire as a Christmas movie discourse every year? And the Jeremy doing the Lemonheads, It's a Shame About Ray. I think that's the Lemonheads. But just singing that song was great. By the way, Jonathan Lipnicki, man, that's got to be the cutest kid ever in a movie. It's hard
pretty
to
awesome.
Beat.
He's pretty adorable.
Cute. I mean, he's
pretty
ridiculous. Adorable. Like, I mean, I don't get like teary eyed in movies, but there's a couple scenes in there with him where I was just like, oh man, he's so cute.
Yeah, you'd have to go back to like Shirley Temple. Like, you know, like, I mean, he's definitely in the pantheon of adorableness in child actors.
Crazy.
So, for sure. All right, let's move on to keeping tabs.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Hey, podcast peeps, it's me again. Those are my dogs. Those are my... every time I talk... Wow. Is this how Aaron feels? When we're... Okay. We're gonna try this. I just wanted to tell you about the survey again, which is at cinemasins.com/BTS. So, go fill it out.
The internet is a communications tool used the world over where people can come together to bitch about movies and share pornography with one another.
Ha ha! Oh, jeez.
This is the most public yet of my many humiliations.
We're just going to talk a little bit about something that happened during the process of bringing these Sins videos to you. Who'd like to kick us off?
I will.
Danae, what do you got?
I had two searches this week. One was from diseases that you can get from a bathroom. Thank you, SpongeBob, for this one.
There's a lot, right?
A lot could happen. It
was
terrifying.
So similar to my keeping tabs, but we'll get there. But
yeah,
continue.
Because we both had sins about how SpongeBob cleaned that bathroom with his body. And there are a lot of things that are in a bathroom. And so as much as I was proud of myself for going there, I won't take us there now.
Dared Aaron to lick a bathroom sink?
No, we haven't.
Should do that.
You know, there was a lot of grossness that was sinful in that bathroom. But the one sin that for whatever reason, annoyed me the most is that they had the sink in the paper towel dispenser right across from the stalls with like no room in between them. Just like, that is such bad design, you know? Anyways.
Yeah.
No, you're right. No, I actually thought about that as well when I was watching it. But I didn't know where to add a sin because you guys had 800.
We had 700 of them. That's right. The other one that I looked up was obviously boob armor. However, I have to give a massive shout out to Chris, who I should have known Wonder Woman was going to be assigned to me months ago when he sent me a link to boob armor. Four things you should know. This is Jill Barup on YouTube. She is fascinating.
You shared this video with me. I think it's absolutely incredible.
It's 20 minutes long, and there's another version that's like a 2 minute and 30 second long, like just the short of it version. But the 20 minute long video is what I watched. And
he just randomly said, wait, hold on a second. He just like, you're just like sitting at home. You're like, oh, hey, email from my boss. That's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a link about this is, boob armor.
This is what it was like. Check your Slack right now, Jonathan. This is what it was like. Just a link to boob armor, four things you should know. That's all it was. And so I should have known. I learned so much. She's very, very informative, very intelligent, very fast-paced information. Like, you could watch this on slow and still absorb more. You would absorb more than you could at the regular pace. So but she does a lot of informative things about battles in movies. So if you've ever kind of been curious about like how all that goes with armor and weaponry, and she also does reenactment and kind of shows how the fluid motion, if you have boob armor like Wonder Woman, it impedes your mobility in these ways. And this is how it would not go to your advantage in battle.
So what would you wear instead? Just like a shirt? I mean, just you just...
For the most part... Oh, go ahead, Danae.
No, go ahead.
My memory was for the most part, you'd tamp them down. You'd try to get them as close to the body as possible, then just wear regular armor.
The armor doesn't do that?
No, so, the armor puts them out there in front of you.
Shocker. Boobs are very squishy. And they just kind of like would fall essentially to your form. The cool side shot. Yeah. If you have boobs and you lay down, especially if you have boobs and they've like breastfed children,
like real
they just
boobs.
Sort of like flop. One goes off to the right of your body. The other goes off to the left of your body.
So you could strap them behind you actually.
Yeah. Yeah. You can just let your like tie them in a knot, tie them in a bow, yeah. That kind of thing.
Use your boob toes to tie them up in the back. Yeah.
The cool side shot of Wonder Woman when she, that really awesome like cinematic shot where she like arcs her body backwards and avoids, I think it was a bullet, and kicks at the same time. And you can just kind of see, and it's just like the curve of her booby armor. Guys, you know this is my job. And this is the only reason I can say this. I stared at that for so long. Like... That is not where her boob is right now. Her boob is flat against her body and probably squished down over here. Like, it's not even there. It's not even in the armor. And that's what, and I only think about this stuff after watching this very informative video, that the boobs don't fill up boob armor. They're just there to show shape. And sometimes that's okay, but functionally for battle, super not okay.
So you're saying Gal Gadot's like boobs are somewhere else. They're not actually in the armor. I see what you're saying now. Okay.
I did extensive viewing of specifically like what she looked like in real clothes versus her Wonder Woman. She does not have boobs that big. And that's a beautiful, wonderful thing.
See, and that's another
thing.
But
even if she did... Yeah. Even if she did, the armor wouldn't.
The armor doesn't. The armor in and of itself is dumb. It serves a purpose to show that she's a female and look cool. But if it was actually built for Wonder Woman, the Amazon warrior, it would be a very different shape. So, and that's the purpose of the video, was to kind of point those things out. And I would have never thought about that unless Chris linked me. So thank you, Chris, for informing me. It's something I will look at in every video game I play. Mm-hmm. Movie I watch, TV show, whenever there's a woman in armor.
Game of Thrones. That was the best. Brienne of Tarth in Game of Thrones.
She had perfect armor. It was just regular armor.
Which because one was the armor,
she is like that big woman warrior.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
With like the short kind of blonde hair that was with
I know you're talking about. Really
Jamie
tall.
Lot.
Yeah, she fell in love with Jamie. And yeah.
So apparently, like armor, like breastplate, for example, is built to have space between the human body and the armor itself, because you have to be able to breathe. Mm-hmm. And that space in and of itself is enough space for boobs. So that's the short of it.
Yep.
I highly recommend going and watching this person's videos, though. Her name is Jill Bearup, and very, very informative. She's got 228,000 subscribers, and she's very, very fun to watch.
If Wonder Woman just wants to be stylish, I mean, that's her right.
You can absolutely.
Correct.
Yeah, it will just impede motion, which is not good in battle.
Just like if Cheetah wants to wear the ripped hot tights, she is than welcome.
She can do that.
And
you do you.
And she should, is all I'm saying.
So just to clarify, Danae has suggested a boob video and that you watch it in slow motion. Those are the things that...
Yes, please do.
She did not know the context of why her boss sent her a boob video, though. And...
Well, but it's our job. And so it's a video, an informative video about something.
When you tell the story
something...
the way you told it, it was so funny to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I know super, Chris, but...
It was within, awesome. I think, 2 weeks that I was assigned Wonder Woman, 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. And I was like, oh, I see what he was doing. And actually, when we were going back and forth and he was, we're talking about like the writing process for me specifically, since we had guest writers and we were going to have so many sins on the table already, kind of like, hey, Danae, here's what we should be really focusing on and honing in on. To fill in the blanks, essentially, of what the new writers might miss, for example. And I wrote back, I was like, I got it. I'm writing boob armor sins. And he goes, exactly.
That's awesome. When I heard that you guys were doing the new writers on that one, and I was like, God, that movie's long. Like, you know.
A lot of sins.
You know.
600.
I was like, that's gonna take a minute.
It took a lot of minutes.
Jonathan, what's your keeping tabs?
I didn't do anything like really extensive. I did refamiliarize myself with the lovely Roy Firestone, who pops up on Jerry Maguire, because I had completely forgotten that show existed. It was a show on ESPN called Up Close, and there were a lot of athletes that would cry on it. And they decided to make fun of that and Jerry Maguire for some reason. I don't really know why. And what was even weirder, when I was doing my research on it, that show ended 2 years before Jerry Maguire even was released.
Came out.
Yeah, so that's amazing. it was like, good God, this is dated in the sense that this show's not even on the freaking air anymore, you know, while I'm watching this movie in the theater. But yeah, I just did some research on that, and I didn't use much of it. But yeah, that show was on from 1980 to 1994. He was all over ESPN. I don't think I've seen the guy since that show went off the air. He did Sunday Night Football at the time. But yeah, you were saying you haven't either?
No, I hope he's just enjoying his retirement.
Yeah, as far as I know. Okay. And I also read, apparently, which I don't think, I misread this at first, but I think it was, I guess OJ was arrested for domestic abuse charges. Maybe this was prior to being arrested for murder. I don't know, but... Apparently, there for a couple of seasons, Roy Firestone, he was, I guess he was a friend of OJ's, I don't know, but he actually took time on his show to talk about the case and why he thought OJ might be innocent and stuff like that. So I thought that was interesting. I didn't remember any of that, but I couldn't really tell, but I think it was a different charge than it was before she was murdered, I believe. But I don't know, that was kind of interesting.
That is interesting.
And apparently, he's a big Baltimore Orioles fan, so I guess him and Jeremy would... get along.
Well, there you go.
Great.
Yeah, he's still around. He's apparently I'm guessing just enjoying retirement down in Florida. So
he's a University of Miami grad. Yeah,
good for him. I wanted to talk about Sleeping in Tidy Whitey's, the sin from the SpongeBob script, the quit killing your starseed and let your boys breathe. I did do some research on that. It also includes one of my favorite puns in the script, which is your friendly pubic cervix announcement, which I thought was fun. And the research is basically this. If you wear tighty whities as a man, you reduce your sperm count by about 25%, is what the studies have shown. So that's kind of what that's talking about.
And there's no need to wear them. There's no need. Like, there are so many other options out there. Why?
Yeah.
Why?
Including... No wonder.
I know,
it's also
but
an option.
Not all of us like to be that free, but there are ways to be less constricted.
Yes, totally.
Than tidy whities.
And then the sleeping in underwear thing is also important for women. There are several studies that show wearing underwear at night for women increases the possibilities of UTIs, yeast infections, and bacterial vaginosis. especially thongs. Never sleep in a thong.
Thong, the thong, thong, thong.
Apparently, because of the way the thong is designed, it can transfer bacteria from one very bad place to another place.
Thongs aren't extremely comfortable, though, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm asking. So. I don't know, but I'm just... I don't. Oh, Aaron, are thongs comfortable, Aaron?
No. No, they are not. Not at all. And then for certain people with skin conditions, also it's really important to sleep nude, or at least now, without I'm not underwear. Sleeping so, nude,
but I'm not wearing tighty whities.
I did also find out that 58% of the U.S. population sleeps nude. So the majority of people sleep without clothes on, which I thought was interesting.
But here's the thing, also though. But won't I mean, I guess underwear could cause the UTI, but also why wouldn't like sheets and stuff cause that as well?
Because I think it has to do with holding in the moisture and different things.
Oh, gotcha, right up against the body.
And
that's interesting.
And not
my wife was actually randomly asking me, because she's like, you know, I've heard the term jock itch, but like, what exactly, like, why? I was like, well, like, I assume it's because the jock strap would, you know, the cup and everything would get mm-hmm. that, keep all that yeah. moisture in.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's how you would get that. Because I haven't had to wear a jock strap in a long time because I don't play sports.
Yeah. Yeah. That's
Danae's just like, this is a fun conversation.
I'm watching Twitch.
I think this is important. I think this
is important.
Danae.
I don't want a UTI.
How dare you disconnect?
I just tuned in to one of my favorite Twitch channels. Slab's in there. So now I'm talking to Slab.
Yeah.
No, of course. No. It's just briefly.
And we're not supposed to feel like offended by that or anything.
No,
like that's just
not.
You're just doing your thing.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to the comment section. I want to know
what you're thinking. I appreciate your honesty. You're a real straight shooter.
You are the ones who are the ball lickers.
We're each going to chat about a comment that you've left somewhere on the internet. And by each of us, I mean Danae and Jonathan are, because I was going to talk a little bit about the thing we already talked about with the end of Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So, Jonathan, why don't you kick us off?
Mine is Jerry Maguire. Fuzzy Stripetail said, the fish that Jerry kidnapped, or fishnapped, thank you for throwing that out there, when he firmly left his sports agent firm, went from a big fish in a small pond to an incredibly ugly small fish in an even smaller pond after Jerry constantly fed it small portions of triple-decker pizza.
Nice.
I like how
good
that
combine.
Was thought out. And I yep. also like the mentioning my you know, which I took forever to think up, fish napping, but I was very happy with it mm-hmm. when it came to me.
It's great. And, it's a beautiful portmanteau.
Yes.
Nicely done. Danae?
Mine came from one of the many that I enjoyed from SpongeBob. This one in particular from Janessa, who says, I once worked at a Dairy Queen that closed at 8 p.m. I rejected so many people their milkshakes. I am so sorry.
I saw that.
I am so sorry. The flock responds, they should have known what time you closed. So just a lot of really wonderful
that
comments.
That is true.
Man,
I mean,
wow, roller coaster. I was feeling good about the apology. And then somebody's like, no, your fault. Pay attention, buddy.
But why are you closing at 8?
That's what I'm saying. That's the sin.
I mean, people are going to go to dinner and then they're going to go get their ice cream after they're done with dinner.
Thank you. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you.
The 8 o'clock thing, I don't know that that would have bothered me before, but only because I don't go for ice cream. Because
right.
it hurts me.
Me too, but I still eat it sometimes.
But since pandemic, obviously a lot of places have had to change their hours because of the availability of those that are able to work there, et cetera.
Sure, sure.
And one of my favorite places to get like a latte in the afternoon or early evening locally started closing at 5:30 or 6. So I've shown up at 6:10, 6:30. Mm-hmm. I'm trying to figure it out because it doesn't. They're not posting it anywhere. Sometimes they just close because there's nobody there anymore and you don't know. So I drive all the way there only to discover that they're not there. That is such a, I don't get frustrated about it because there's so many other more important issues in the world. But that's what's more frustrating to me than someone who has consistent hours and you just forget that they close at 8. There's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Listen, I don't go to Dairy Queen, but when I do, I want it to be open. That's all I'm saying. The other one that I learned in our small town, we have the world's best donut shop and they have an afternoon closing, which makes sense for a donut shop, but I didn't realize that. And I went there one time and they were closed and I was very sad.
I'm like you, Danae. Ice cream is never a good idea for me. It destroys my body, but it's so good. And some days you're just like, fuck it. I need some cookies and cream.
Yeah.
And then later that night, my wife's like, I told you you'd be miserable. And but I like to give her that win. So yeah.
That's right. That's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. That's a good relationship right there. All right, let's move into Beyond the Sins.
To infinity and beyond.
Somewhere beyond my wild history.
To boldly go where no man has gone before.
We're each going to talk about something else from the world of pop culture that we have seen or experienced recently.
Beyond our wildest dreams.
Somewhere. Somewhere beyond our wildest dreams. I'll start. Invincible. Have we talked about Invincible on the show yet?
No, not yet.
Let's do it. The season finale technically released today as we're recording this, I believe. I did get a chance to see it a little bit early, and I have increasingly grown to like this show.
Cool.
I think I've mentioned elsewhere, maybe on Twitter and some different places, that I'm kind of exhausted with the it's superheroes but more adult thing that seems to be happening a lot.
Batman Begins.
No, more like The Boys was kind of the first one to really embrace it, and then is it The Nevers that's on HBO that's kind of that same thing?
I haven't watched that. Is that
I haven't
what that
either,
is?
But and then there's like I know there's another one coming that I recently just heard about.
Jupiter's Legacy, maybe.
There's a couple cartoons, too, that are doing the same thing, including Invincible. And so I was just kind of like a little bit just like, oh, okay, is this the next, what we're doing now? And there's only so many things you can do just by pushing that envelope. Like once the Boys pushes the envelope like it does, the pushing of the envelope becomes a little less interesting as far as a part of it goes. But what's really great about this show is the storytelling. This show really understands storytelling structure. It understands its characters. It understands investment. It understands the idea of how you have to find your way into caring about what the characters care about. And it does all that stuff really well, so that by the finale, I was in. And I thought the finale was bold and powerful and nuanced in a way that I wasn't expecting. And yeah, that's all I'm going to say, because I don't want to spoil stuff, but I'm really enjoying it now.
I'm a few episodes behind, so I don't know where they're... it's one of my all-time favorite comic books, and I've actually read the series. Because it's another cool thing about a lot of superhero comic books, especially like Marvel and DC, but this one actually has a beginning, middle, and end, right? It's actually done. It ended at 145 issues. It actually has an ending. I've read through it a couple times, and it's Robert Kirkman created it, who's created a lot of other stuff that's been adapted, like Walking Dead and stuff like that. But it's great. And it's one of my favorite comic book series. I jokingly call it the R-rated Spider-Man, which I think that's probably pretty fair. Because he's kind of a Peter Parker type. He's a little older, but he's kind of like that. And,
it's a little bit, it's almost a little bit, it's a little bit X-Men too, though.
Yeah,
which is another thing.
Absolutely.
With this stuff is, all the different cool, weird power thing, which I love about the X-Men is here too.
Yeah, it blatantly, I guess, quote unquote, pays homage or rips off, however you want to do it, but like it blatantly pays tribute to Marvel and DC characters and doesn't even really change the names up that much sometimes. It's kind of funny. But it works, and I don't know. I can't explain that. But the comic book is great. The TV show so far, I've really enjoyed it. I think it captures the spirit of it perfectly. And they've kind of bounced around, so I'm really curious to see where they're going to end the season on. Hopefully, I'll have that watched this weekend. But so I'm glad you're liking it, though. That's good to hear.
Invincible is available on Amazon Prime,
and it just got renewed for two more seasons.
Two more seasons. So, yeah, you can check it out there. Jonathan, what do you got?
I finally watched, it's been on Netflix for a minute, but I finally just got around to watching the documentary, The Last Blockbuster. You haven't talked about this, have you, Aaron?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, okay. Then I guess you haven't.
Yeah.
I know we talked about Blockbuster not that long ago, and I don't remember why. Yeah. Because we were both explaining how we don't really have this...
nostalgia.
Well, yeah, like I don't really miss going. Like But what I do find, and so anyways, there's The Last Blockbuster is this documentary. It's available on Netflix. There is a Blockbuster. It still exists as of today. I believe it's still there. I know as of at least the end of 2020 it was in Bend, Oregon. And so this is a documentary kind of talking about that. And when the documentary starts, I think there's still 12 locations. And then it gets down to, like, I think in 2017 or 18, the last one closed. There was three left in Alaska. They closed. And then so this one in Bend is the only one that's left. Mm-hmm. And actually the documentary is kind of covering... there towards the end, it's covering a few days before they're supposed to, because Dish TV owns the Blockbuster name. And so the documentary is kind of like leading up to whether or not they're going to get to renew it and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And but it is interesting. It's a video. So the main focus, I guess, is that this last Blockbuster exists in Bend, Oregon. All these people from all over the world and country come and visit it. Like, you know, because they want to go back and they have this nostalgic tie into it and stuff. And so you get a lot of talking heads. You get people like Kevin Smith and Adam Brody and Doug Benson is in a lot of it. And you get these people talking about it. You get interviews with the woman that runs the Blockbuster, who's this really sweet lady. And so I don't know. So it's kind of interesting. But like, yeah, I don't really have that connection. So when I see some of this stuff, like some of these people are talking, like they're creating this, like I miss the smell of it and I miss the sound of the tape opening. I kind of have a hard time not laughing. And that's really mean. Funny. But like to me, I'm
is
just
it?
Like, I don't know. But to me, I'm just like, I don't really get that. But what I will say is I do find it very fascinating, though. That like that is a time that is like an era in our life that is just gone. Like,
yeah,
you know, because I mean, and it's like, and they even the most interesting parts of the documentary are when they're kind of talking about the beginnings of it, because I never even thought about that, like how weird a video rental place is, because like we don't have book rentals, you know. Mm-hmm. You don't have, you know, I mean, it's such an odd thing. But the reason it happened was because the studios were upselling their VHS tapes. And so mm-hmm. these people yep. came in and they're like, well, we'll buy them and then we'll rent them for cheaper. And then the studios tried to sue them and lost. And then eventually, you know, Blockbuster comes in and becomes like this big mega corporation, like the Walmart of these things,
mm-hmm.
which is another soft spot for a lot of people, because a touching point for a lot of people, because you'll see people on social media talk about how they miss Blockbuster, and then you'll have always somebody come in, but Blockbuster was evil, you know, and
mm-hmm.
there's,
right.
you know, just let people like what they like. I don't know why that's so hard, but apparently it is for a lot of people. But anyway, so this documentary touches on a lot of that. It's a fun documentary, like it's entertaining. It doesn't mm-hmm. have a lot of focus, and that's kind of a problem for me. Like it kind of touches on why Blockbuster went under, but it doesn't really go into depth on that. And so I almost wish it had just stayed more focused on the personal aspects, like the people that miss it and like the Bend, Oregon yeah. location and stuff. So it kind of goes back and forth. And so I think it loses a little bit of its focus. And like I said, I don't have this tie-in. I don't have this, like, I don't miss these, like the way, I guess, people that would really be into this would. So maybe this will be better for you if that's something you really miss, but it's entertaining. It's really interesting look back on this just time period that just isn't a thing anymore. You know, they just, these places don't exist anymore. And it's really not, because Family Video was, I guess, the last chain, and they recently had to shut all their doors because of the pandemic. Yep. So I mean, video yep. stores are just gone other than this one.
It's crazy. You know, we can compare it to 10 years from now. Maybe movie theaters are gone. You
maybe.
Know, like the idea of that, where it's like, then I can see like us talking about, oh, yeah. I miss the smell that when you would walk in of the popcorn and yeah. the, you know, and the, you know, the way that the floor stuck to your shoe. And
I rented movies. I've spent a lot of times in Blockbuster, and I do have memories of being in movie rental places. I will say the one thing that was interesting about this that I never really thought about, if you have this problem with the corporate aspect of it, there are two different types of Blockbuster franchises. There's the corporate stores, but then there's the right. ones where the people bought into the franchise. And a lot of those, like in this case, this couple, they moved from California to Bend, Oregon. They opened up these small video stores called Pacific Video. And then Blockbuster came in the 90s and basically said, look, we're going to keep making stores and take you out, or we can buy you out and you can just run Blockbusters. And so they decided to do that. But because of that, it still has that mom-pa feel to it. Like, it's not like a corporate Blockbuster, like sure. it's still very much like that town. It's this local, you know, just kind of vibe that town's got, and they, you know,
sure.
they all know each other, and you know, they just, you know, so that aspect of it was interesting to me. You know, it's But I don't know. Like I said, it's light and breezy. It's perfectly entertaining. It's like an hour and 20 minutes. It's really short. But it's definitely not something, if you're looking for like the history of Blockbuster or something, this is not the documentary to go watch. But but if any of that sounds interesting, I think you'll have fun with it.
That is The Last Blockbuster on Netflix.
Which is also kind of funny.
Yeah, exactly. Danae, what do you got?
I'm actually just going to continue to shout out Jill Barrett. I know I mentioned her in my keeping tabs. It's just someone think that you guys would enjoy because she's really very analytical and researched, and she sends things. I mean, she's pointing out what's wrong with or how things actually work, but it's specific to, like I said, choreography for fighting and costuming and things like that as it relates to that. There's a video that she has specifically about Wonder Woman, so it's not just about boob armor in general. That's for video games and TV and everything in general, but she specifically goes at Wonder Woman. I opted to not watch this video before my sins writing just so I could have my clear, you know, go at it the Danae way. So I only watched the booby armor one that Chris had sent to me. I didn't go into like full on review. That came out, I think, April 15th. So just recently, actually. Wonder Woman 1984, Gravity Would Like a Word. Gravity Would Like a Word, please. So she's really quippy and clever. And I really enjoy her. Jill Barrup, B-E-A-R-U-P.
Nice.
Is her name.
Jill Barrup on YouTube. So Invincible on Amazon Prime, Last Blockbuster on Netflix, and Jill Barrup on YouTube. Well, that's going to do it for Behind the Scenes this week. Don't forget to make sure you're subscribed. Go ahead and leave a comment or rating as well. If you've got anything you want to send us, you can mail it to P.O. Box 881, Republic, Missouri, 65738. You can hang out with us on Twitter. I am at Aaron Dicer. She is at Danae Says.
D-E-N-E-E-S-A-Y-S.
And he is at Sam Loomis 13. So for Jonathan Watkins, Danae Hughes, a strain of Streptococcus, and myself, we will see you next week.
Happy National Beverage Day!
Dr. Pepper!
Thanks for listening. Send any feedback to bts@cinemasins.com. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and comment. Find more ways to connect by visiting cinemasins.com/BTS.
Hello, hello.
What up? It's the Rick Dance.
Yeah.
It's so wild to me how different outtake brain is than writing brain. Like, I have to, like, I legit have to shift gears to do one or the other. It's such a
sometimes while I'm watching it, though, I just, stuff pops in my head, you know, and so I can, I can jot it down. And then, but then there's sometimes, and I don't know. These last couple of things I've done, I've had to go back and actually rewatch just to get outtakes, which I hadn't had to do in a while. And
yeah, outtakes are a bitch.
What I will notice for me is, you're right, I'll be in writing brain and I'll get away and I'm like, man, I haven't had an outtake for a while. And then something will pop in my head in like the next few minutes after that. And I'll be like, oh, cool. And so I'll do the outtake. And then it's just like I'm seeing outtakes everywhere because I've shifted into outtake brain. And so then I'm like, fine. And then I'm like, no, I need to go back to writing the script. It's like my brain just gets in a rut.
What's one of the hardest movies I've had to do? All of them? No.
Like, Girls Trip is still probably the hardest I've ever written because, like, I think I watched that and I had, like, 10 sins. But that's not a terrible movie or anything. It was just, I just had no sins. You know, I couldn't think of anything. It was like, oh, hey, she's pissing on everybody in the crowd. That's funny.
That's great. Gotta love pee humor. The most shocking, I mean, this is probably not true, but I was not ready for it, pee moment in media, was the very beginning to the show Billions. Do you watch Billions?
Well, we did the pilot.
On show. Oh, that's right. We did the pilot, so you know this moment.
Yeah, the golden shower or whatever.
Yes, yeah. It starts with her peeing all over him, and it's just in like, because...
What?
But no, seriously, like it starts with him on the floor, and she's straddling him, and she just starts, and she releases all over him. Yeah. And it's just like, oh... What is this show? And the show is, that is not this show. That is just like background on him as a character that, you know, he likes to be dominated.
No, going into that, Aaron was telling me how much he loved the show, and I had never seen it. And then that was the first scene, and I was like,
right? That show is so funny and clever and has so many great pop culture references.
I haven't watched it again.
It's so good, but that first scene is like, oh, is this the show we're in for? Like, what is this? Yeah, that just shocked me. I was like, okay.
I figured there was more to it. I didn't think Paul Giamatti would be doing a show where that's all there was to it. I mean, I figured.
Just every week.
Yeah. The other guy in that, what's his name? The guy from Homeland?
Damien, right? Lewis, right? Damien
yeah,
Lewis?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like him a lot. He did that show. Did you watch that show, Life?
No.
It was like an NBC show or something. It only lasted a couple seasons. He played like
I didn't have to watch it. I live it, man.
I didn't even quit watching it because I think we quit getting Showtime or something. I think that's all it was. And then I just hadn't gotten back around to it.
If you want a rant, I can give you a rant because Showtime should be included with Paramount Plus, and I will die on this hill. I do not understand how you build a streaming service as CBS, Viacom, Paramount, and don't put Showtime on that service when your competitor is called HBO Max and it's all Warner HBO. So like
you can get Showtime on there, right? But you got to pay for it, right?
Correct. It's a whole different subscription fee, mm-hmm. which is as much as the Paramount Plus subscription fee. It's like you own that stuff.
I have a lot of issues with Paramount Plus. Like their setup is terrible. You can't get a queue. Like you can't make a queue. Like what streaming service doesn't allow you to make a queue?
Right.
Like that should be
Paramount Plus.
That should be the first thing. You should be able to add stuff to a list.
Like in your line of things to do, let's call it a queue. In your queue of things to do,
create a queue.
You should create a queue. That should be number one, or maybe number two. Showtime should be in there. ESPN should be a channel on Disney Plus.
Because that's separate, right?
Yeah, Cinemax should be part of HBO Max. Max is right in the name.
Yeah,
it's called HBO Max.
That confused me. I thought Cinemax was gonna be in there. Like, why were they?
It should.
Why were they calling it HBO Max?
Because it means maximum.
I know. Well, I get that now, but at the time, I thought, they're gonna bring the Cinemax stuff over.
But guess what? If Cinemax is not in there, it's not maximum. You've still got some that could go in there. Danae doesn't know. Doesn't want to tell us the writer, but just for the sake of having a name, let's call this one
Carl.
Kevin Sting.
Kevin Sting.
Pames Jatterson.
Nice. Thank you, Gron Jissom.
Oh, my God.
I like making you laugh, Jonathan. It's fun.
Gisa Laxon. Booty Joom. Who also passed away recently. That was recent, though. She was like, 103? 104 or something like that.
Oh, wow. I didn't know she was that old.
She was.
Twark Maine. All right. Enough spooneristic authors. Let's go ahead and get into this. All right. Danae, you ready? Ready, set, go?
I mean, I guess. Whatever. I guess. I mean, okay, fine.